sitting there thinking as we were singing, this is my 34th Mother's Day since I've been in the ministry. Not the third. I'm not that young, so I've been around for more than 34. But this is the 34th time that I've stood on Mother's Day, and I tried to recall the number of times that I've actually brought a message on mothers, and it's been very few. I'm not necessarily feel obliged to preach on a subject, whatever day that we might be celebrating. I'm probably a little more prone to do that on maybe a Christmas or Easter, but other days, not necessarily so. And I look back in my time, this is the sixth Mother's Day that I've been here at Sulphur Fork, and I've not brought a message on mothers since I've been here during Mother's Day, but I felt led to do that this morning. I've studied for that somewhat this week, and I hadn't looked at the Sunday school lesson, and sometimes the Sunday school lesson doesn't necessarily follow whatever particular holiday that we're celebrating, but in today's case, they did, and so some of the things that I might have to say were covered in that Sunday school lesson this morning. But I want to take a reading. I want to take a reading from the book of 1 Kings. The book of 1 Kings. I'll tell you what the title is to my message here after I take this reading. And I will give full disclosure. The title of my message and perhaps a few points from it were from a message that I heard probably 15, 17 years ago and took some notes on as I listened to it. And so it's not all originally from me. But then I've never really done anything original anyway. Somebody has preached nearly everything that I've preached. I have nothing new. As preachers, we find ourselves just looking for new ways to bring out the same message, the old message that we find throughout the Scriptures. And so that will be the case this morning as well. In the book of 1 Kings, in the third chapter, beginning about the 16th verse, this was at the outset of Solomon's reign as king, and certainly we'll all remember that Solomon was well known for his wisdom. He had just, and he was very young as well, which was very marveling in the wisdom that he had because he was so young when he became king, much different than Kim Jong-un or whatever his name is in Korea, North Korea, who took that kingship at about 22 years of age, and he's shown in many cases that he's very unwise. Solomon, on the other hand, showed his wisdom, and this is one of those lessons. Beginning at the 16th verse of the third chapter of 1 Kings, it says, "Then came two women that were harlots unto the king and stood before him. And the one woman said, O my lord, I and this woman dwell in one house, and I was delivered of a child with her in the house. And it came to pass the third day after that I was delivered, that this woman was delivered also, and we were together. There was no stranger with us in the house, save we two in the house. And this woman's child died in the night, because she overlaid it. And she arose at midnight, and took my son from beside me, while thine handmaid slept, and laid it in her bosom, and laid her dead child in my bosom. And when I rose in the morning to give my child suck, behold, it was dead. And when I had considered it in the morning, behold, it was not my son which I did bear. And the other woman said, No, but the living is my son, and the dead is thy son. And this said, No, but the dead is thy son, and the living is my son. Thus they spake before the king. Well, then said the king, The one saith, This is my son that liveth, and thy son is dead. And the other saith, No, but thy son is dead, and my son is the living. And the king said, Bring me a sword. And they brought a sword before the king. And the king said, Divide the living child in two, and give half to the one and half to the other. Then spake the woman whose the living child was unto the king, for her bowels yearned upon her son. And she said, O my lord, give her the living child, and in no wise slay it. But the other said, Let it be neither mine nor thine, but divide it. And then the king answered and said, give her the living child, and in no wise slay it, for she is the mother thereof. And all of Israel heard the judgment which the king had judged, and they feared the king, for they saw the wisdom of God was in him to do judgment. Now, that story is recorded, no doubt, to exemplify the wisdom of Solomon and the way that he made this decision. And certainly, most every time that I've heard it mentioned, that is the theme of the presentation. But, you know, many times, just like when we watch a television show, you know, there's something going on that the main show, but then there's an underlying story that's always there that seems to continue on. And sometimes the underlying story can be just as important or maybe even more so than the immediate events. And that's the way that this story is. There's an underlying story here that many times is just overlooked, and that is the love that this mother had for her child. You know, I don't know how many of you remember. Well, I remember it. I'm old, and you can acknowledge how old you are maybe by acknowledging whether you remember the show or not. But there used to be a program on television called To Tell the Truth. Anybody remember that show? Okay, we do have some old people. Or they may have made a remake of it by now. I don't know. You know, they took all the old programs and tried to make remakes of it. But the old program, To Tell the Truth, there was a panel of, I guess they were celebrities. That's hard for me to remember. It was a long time ago, but I did see it, and I do remember it. But there would be three people come on, and each one would claim to be a certain person or a celebrity. They would give accounts, some of them false and some of them true, to try to persuade the contestants that they were really this person. And so through a series of questions and through a series of responses, it was up to the contestants to try to, or to the panel to try to figure out who was telling the truth. And finally, at the end, the show host would say, would the real so-and-so please stand up? And so that would be the title of my message this morning. It's not an original title, but would the real mom please stand up? You see, that's the wisdom that Solomon used. Very similar. He had two conflicting stories. Both were saying that the child was theirs. And so it was up to him to figure out which one was the real mom. And you know, Solomon used his wisdom to do that. And so we can find that, I believe, to be true about real mothers. And that is that when the chips are down, real moms stand up. Real moms will stand up. And there's some other lessons that we can learn through this. And that's what I would like to try to just talk a little bit about this morning. One of the lessons that is very prevalent in this story is that real moms do not have to be perfect. Real moms don't have to be perfect. Moms make mistakes. I don't know the story, the whole story of these two moms. But I know that in this case, the moms were both working women. Now, I've got to stand in and give an account of what I believe. Because as the scripture opened up, it says that there were two harlots that came before the king with their children. That's somewhat troubled me ever since that I've read that story with a little bit of wisdom. And I know that word is used to represent prostitution. But I don't believe that that's what that word meant. From other studies, and I'm going to defend these two women just a little bit, because the more that you follow that word and look back further and try to understand the Chaldean interpretation of that, the word that we find was also used for an innkeeper, one who kept a home for travelers. We might call it a bed and breakfast, because that it was places where that men travel or people that were traveling could find a place in which to lodge. Generally, in the Eastern societies, We know that this is true in Egypt. We know that it's true in Macedonia or in other eastern areas because of the old writings that are there. Generally, women would keep those homes or those inns that were for travelers. I believe that the word is improperly translated as a harlot, because the idea is one who sells goods. Not necessarily herself, but one who sells her goods. And so that's the etymology behind the word. One who sold her goods. She put her house out. She made food. She provided for those who stayed in the house. You remember the story of when Joshua had sent out the spies to go into spy out the land of Canaan before that they went in and possessed it. It says that they went into the wall and there they went into the house of a harlot. That's the same word that's used here. Rahab was the keeper of that place, and she was a helper and an assistant unto them. She was a working woman, and she had to make her way in life. These two women, I believe, were the same. If you follow the passage through, you also use some logic in it. One is that prostitution was forbidden in Israel. It might have been promoted in other nationalities, but in Israel, it was prohibited by laws in which that they were to be cast out. It's unthinkable in the Israelite society that two women in that profession would actually come before the king, endangering themselves and expect to get judgment. And so I revert to the older interpretation, where that these two young ladies, for whatever reason, kept a bed and breakfast, a place where travelers came through. They provided for them. They cooked for them. They gave them food. I don't know whether strong drink was used or not then. I don't know. But the only reason that I say that is, let's not jump to conclusions about the character of these young women, as we many times do. Sometimes people jump to wrong conclusions about character of men and women, but particularly of mothers. If mothers, for instance, have to go out into the workplace, the older generations many times would say, well, you know, moms need to be at home. Sometimes moms need to work. These mothers had to work. For whatever reason, they had to work. But we need to understand that sometimes that mothers are put in positions where that they have to provide for themselves and for their children. I do not believe that these two women were prostitutes, as we know the term to be. And I don't know where their husbands were or if they had husbands. I don't know. They said there was no one in the house, but the two of them, when these events occurred, perhaps their husbands were out of war. Perhaps they didn't have any husbands. I don't know. What we need to do is focus upon the fact, though, that these women had to provide for themselves and had to provide for their children as they went through life. And so mothers don't have to be perfect. Most mothers, they're not prepared for motherhood. You can go take classes now and they'll prepare you some. But just like Brother David said in Sunday school this morning, at one point when he realized when he had two young girls to take care of, that what a mother really went through. And I doubt that any mother is fully prepared. It might help if you've been raised in a family with a lot of children. Perhaps you're the elder one and you've assisted in taking care of your children. But I don't think that any mother is fully prepared for the responsibility that they have when that child all of a sudden is there and it's their responsibility. And they may make mistakes as they go along the way, but that's not one of the qualifications of motherhood, is that you be perfect. Because if that were the case, then none would be good mothers. And yet we find that none of us are perfect, and certainly none are really fully prepared as they go along. Mothers sometimes have to make tough choices, and sometimes they make poor choices. Now, one of the mothers in this lesson that we read made a poor choice. She evidently, and I'm just assuming, but it says that she overslept the child at night, meaning that she laid over on it. Perhaps it was a poor choice in that she should have taken the child and put it somewhere close to her bed where that it wouldn't be in danger of her rolling over on it. Certainly a young infant like that, it can be dangerous. I don't know. Perhaps it was a poor choice on her part. I don't know. Sometimes a mother can make a poor choice. And sometimes they have to make difficult choices. And so we find out that, again, real moms don't have to be perfect. And the other thing that we need to bear in mind is that childbearing changes a woman. Now you say, how do you know that, preacher? You're not never had any children. Well, I haven't. You're right. But I know that it does. It changes them physically. It has an effect upon their physical bodies. They begin to their body begins to provide the things and the nourishment and the things necessary for the child. I know that that there's a weight problem that they've got to work at. So it has a physical bearing upon their body as they bring children into the world. It has an emotional bearing upon them. They're no longer carefree. They're no longer just them and their husband, or if they're a single mom, it's no longer just them. But now they have the emotional drain of their life has changed altogether. They have this little package of responsibility that is fully theirs to watch for, to care for, and to worry about. And so it changes them emotionally. It changes them physically. And folks, it changes them socially as well. You know, they have a circle of friends that a mother enjoys while they're single, and they can come and go as they please. If they want to stay out late at night, they can do that. If they want to adjust their schedule to the way that they feel, perhaps at that time they can. Once that child comes into the home, that child has to get the attention, and so all of the social acquaintances have to take a back stage. And so that's a huge change in the life of a mother as children come into the world. I know every one of you young ladies and older ones who have had children, perhaps even now have grandchildren, I know that the three things that I've said you can vouch for and say are true. That it changed you physically, it changed you emotionally, and it had a dramatic impact upon you socially as well. Those are part of the things that a mother goes through, and no doubt these mothers were going through it as well. Another thing that I want to point out is that real moms get to know their children. They get to know them real well. They know where every mole is, where every spot is. They examine them. You see, the mother in this story that we read, she had examined her young child. She had looked, and what's the first thing you do when that your children are born and you see them for the first time? You count to make sure they got all their fingers and all their toes, and you look them over to try to make sure that little body is just the way that it ought to be. And it's not long before that you memorize those things. And many of us we see a set of twins and we can't tell them apart. But I'll tell you what, after the first day, moms can tell them apart. They know where every little mole is. They know where everything is. And so real moms, they examine their children. They, not just physically, but they stay close to them. They learn what they think. They learn the way that they behave. They learn all about them. They can tell when they're sick. They can tell when they're not feeling well and when they're not quite up to par. That's because real moms get such an attachment to them, and rightfully so, that they know every little thing about them and they can see many of those things coming along the way. And so that's important. It's also important for children to realize that because moms know them, They know when they're lying. They know, and they can look right at them and tell when they're telling a falsehood or when they're trying to deceive them. They can tell all those things because they've become intimately acquainted with them, not just physically, but also emotionally and all those things about their children. And I tell you what, real moms, real stand-up moms, the ones that when you've examined them and you say, will the real mom please stand up? They'll stand up. And that is because that you never end being a mom. You never end being a mom. You never end being a dad either, but moms are special. And it doesn't matter whether that your child has grown to adulthood and has their own children, and you love your grandchildren, but your children are still your children, and you still learn about them, and you still are concerned about them, and overlook them, and examine them all the way through life. That just never stops. That's just a part of being a parent and being a mother specifically. And so real moms get to know their children from the beginning, and they stay with them, and they keep close to them and learn about them all as they go along in life. Now, another thing that I want to point out about real stand-up moms is that they consider their children before they consider themselves. They think about their children before they think about themselves. Now, I said that my interpretation of that word harlot was that these women kept a bed and a breakfast or an inn or however you want to put it, and it was usually in a place where travelers came through. That's one of the reasons that I believe that Rahab was an innkeeper, because the inns were usually kept at the gates of the city. Because the people lived inside of the city, but as travelers traveled through and up and down the country, and they came to a walled city, rather than having to go inside of the city, the inns or the places for travelers were always kept on the city walls. And we know that Rahab's place of employment was on the city wall, because that's where the spies went, and when she sought to protect them, she let them down on the outside of the wall. Now, let me bring you just another point about that situation with Rahab, and I bring up Rahab simply because that Rahab was an extremely important part of God's plan, and not that God can't use a mother or someone who's been involved in things that he has said were abominable to him. He can, but we find that Rahab married one of Caleb and was right in the direct lineage of Jesus Christ. And so, again, not that God can't save one out of the gutter or out of a bad moral condition and use them. We find him doing that time and time again. But again, I say, let us give the benefit of the doubt and try to understand the situation. Now, the other thing is that in every society, that those who were engaged in that type of prostitution, they really had no rights. They had no legal rights whatsoever. And if you'll read that account in the book of Joshua, that after that Rahab had received those spies in, and that word had gotten out, that the king of Jericho sent to Rahab and asked her. He didn't demand. He didn't tell her that she didn't have any rights, but he asked her to bring forward those that were in her house. Now, that's an important point, because you see, in Eastern societies, when you come under someone's roof, you were considered to be such a special guest that they would lay down their life to protect you. That's how important that it was to show hospitality and to ensure that anyone who came under your roof, that they were safe and that they were just like your family, and that they would lay down their life to protect you. And so when the king besought Rahab to deliver forth the spies, he was asking, and so she had the right of refusal because that she was the one who had given them lodging, and they were under the protection of her house. And so, regardless of which way that it is, these two young women, were they engaged in a profession that was illegal, they would have put themselves at risk to go before the king in order to get a settlement of this case. And so again, it points to the fact that real moms will consider the needs of their children before they consider their own. How many of you mothers, and I regret to say that as my children were growing up, I was not as interactively participating in their feeding and getting up at night and giving them bottles and all. I used the excuse, well, I work shift work, or I had to get up and go to work the next morning, but it was really just an excuse. But I know that our son and Robert and the young fathers of today are far more involved in the day-to-day routine of taking care of those children, and it's usually at the sacrifice of some sleep and the sacrifice of many times of the rest that they need, especially when they're sick and they're needing attention, and mothers will go without sleep themselves to take care of their children. That's because they put their children first. So, just as the mother in our lesson did. Mothers are defenders of the weak. They're defenders of the defenseless. You let a little child be picked on and see what a mother does. She'll start to take up for them. All of you probably remember Sarah Palin. She said the only difference between a soccer mom and a pit bull is lipstick. That's because soccer moms are going to defend their kids. And if somebody does them wrong or somebody mistreats them, they're going to be right up in their face to protect them. That's what mothers do. And they're going to be the first ones there to try to make sure that their children are treated correctly and that they're looked out for. That just seems to be inbred in them. And I don't suppose that I can think of a better comparison than Sarah Palin had because I've seen my wife do that. I've seen her go to school and get pretty frank with some of the teachers. I've seen her do those things necessary to defend our children if they've been wronged. And so mothers defend the defenseless. And not only their own children, they'll take up for others as well because they see the injustice that is in there. And so, you can always tell the real mom because she'll be the first one out there to defend her children to make sure that they're getting a fair shake and they're not being mistreated. Real mothers need and utilize God's boundaries. Now think of that. Real mothers, real stand-up moms need and utilize God's boundaries. What boundaries am I talking about? I'm talking about, first of all, the boundary of family. The boundary of family. In other words, real moms, they like to color inside of the lines that God has provided. And God has provided us boundary lines wherein that we might have comfort, that we might have provision, that we might have peace. And certainly the biggest boundary, the first boundary line that God gives us is the boundary of family. And within that family, whether it's a small family or a large family, that is the unit that God has designated to be the basic building block for all of societies. And so moms will work within that boundary that God has provided them because they realize that this is the foundation of beginning to build character, to beginning to build wisdom, to beginning to build independence into their own children. And so that family foundation is essential. Why do you think it is that the Germans, for instance, during Hitler's time there, what they wanted to take the children out of the home and put them under the care of the state? Because they wanted to infiltrate their minds with the things that the state wanted them to believe. They wanted them to grow up and be what they wanted. And so they knew that the only way that could happen was to take them out of the boundary of the family. And so moms will try to work within the boundary of that family and to keep their family together. Many times that I've seen on newscasts and whatnot on television where that some mothers, perhaps from bad choices, because not all mothers make good choices all the time. None of us make good choices all the time. But I've seen where that mothers have had to perhaps go to a homeless shelter or even try to live in their cars to keep their family together because they understood the importance of keeping that family together and try to build upon the foundation of that. A family unit is to be a safe place. It's to be a place that is loving, where the children don't fear, where the children don't feel as though they're in danger. Children should be able to go to bed at night and go to sleep without any fear. And to try to keep them within the boundary of that family and that love in that family is an essential thing that mothers recognize, and fathers, hopefully. Well, I wish I could say that about fathers. I wish I could say that across the board about fathers. But unfortunately, we see in our society more and more where that fathers are just abandoning their families, and young children are growing up fatherless. They're growing up in homes because the fathers have abandoned them. It's happening more and more in our inner cities. That wasn't the aim of my message today, but it's true. It's true. And so fathers are not stepping up to the plate near the rate that mothers are stepping up, because it seems as though many young men just want to go out and father children and leave them to the mothers or the grandmothers to raise. And at least the mothers are trying to keep somewhat of a family unit. And that's an important thing for us to realize, because it's within that family unit that child is going to feel loved, where that child is going to feel safe, and where that child is going to begin the learning process. And so real moms, I believe real moms will try in whatever way that they're forced to maintain a family unit. We talked in Sunday school this morning about the amazing mothers who many times have had to raise their children because the fathers have been taken off to war. Perhaps not so much so now as it has been in the past, where that jobs were so dangerous that the death rate of men was much higher than women because of the danger of the job that they had as they tried to provide for their families. And so many times the mothers were left with two or three children to try to raise in that family unit. And they did the best that they could and to try to provide a safe environment, even with the limitations that they had. My mother's own family was that way. My grandfather died in the coal mines when my mom was 15. And she had younger brothers and sisters. But her mother tried to hold the family unit together, to try to keep it together as good as she could with all the responsibility that was on her. She had external family, brother, uncles and whatnot, that did what they could, but she tried to keep her family together as a unit. And so we find that working within that framework that God has given is what mothers should and most often try to do, as to create the safe environment. Another boundary that I believe that real stand-up moms will recognize is the importance of fatherhood. There are so many today that want to have single parent families where the child is raised in a home without a father. I say the biggest part of that blame goes to the fathers, but not all of it. But we need to recognize that men and women are different. And children who grow up without a fatherly influence, now that father may be a grandfather, it may be a godly neighbor that has tried to help, but that male influence plays an extremely important part in the rounding and understanding of that child as it grows up. Because men and women are different. We see life perspectively different. We approach things differently. And when you deprive a child of a fatherly influence, you're depriving that child of half of the instructions that they need. Now, I'm talking about godly fathers. I'm not talking about gangbangers who are down here that are having children, but yet they're setting a poor example. I'm talking about setting the right example. The example of love between a man and a woman. The example of taking on responsibility. The example of working and providing for your family. All those are pictures that a child can get from a mother, but the rounded picture comes from the father, and godly stand-up moms recognize the importance of that fatherly figure. If they've been deprived of having that man in the house through loss of a husband, through war or work or whatever that it might be, they should seek to find some godly fatherly influence upon their children. I believe that real stand-up moms will do that. They'll recognize that. It breaks my heart when I hear that so many young ladies want to start a single parent family. That's the wrong thinking. To think that, well, I can raise a child without a father. Yes, you can do it physically, but you're giving that child a disadvantage. Don't start into that by thinking, well, I can go down and I can have in vitro fertilization. I don't need a man in my life. Well, maybe you don't, but it's still a wrong choice, because God has determined that the family unit needed both the mother and the father in order to have the correct balance for the child as the child grows up. And I believe that stand-up moms who care about their children will recognize the importance of having a godly, fatherly influence on their children. Now, let me look at the other side of that. If that male influence is not godly and it's not constructive, then it can be a danger and a harm to expose that child to that kind of influence. And the mother may have to make a hard choice. She may have to make a hard choice. If that child is being brought up in a home where the father is an alcoholic or drug abuse or whatever, and violence in the house, and the child is exposed to an unsafe environment all the time, and all of those things, that mother may have to make the choice to separate from that male figure for the benefit of the child. But hopefully, prayerfully, she's going to look for a positive male influence from another source, from a good father, grandfather, a good neighbor, a good elder in the church, someone to help put a fatherly influence on that child. I got to move on. I'm about out of time. There is the boundary of church. What is church? Church is an extended family. It is a family that comes together, that has something in common, that we've all been saved by the grace of God, and that we are one large family where we love one another. Last week, I preached on the new commandment that Jesus said that we are to love one another as He loved us. I tell you that a mom who's put in a situation where that she doesn't have a fatherly influence upon her children needs to search out a good church somewhere where that she can take those children and that she can be, they can be exposed to love, they can be exposed to the good influence of godly men in their lives. And most of all, they can learn about the Lord Jesus Christ. They can learn about their own soul. They can learn about the salvation that God has provided. I believe that the stand-up mom will make sure that her kids are in church where they can get that teaching, that training, that love, that extended family that they need. Oh, many of them will make sure that they belong to the soccer team, or that they belong to the swimming team, or the basketball team, or the football team, but they won't take them to church. And yet, the church is the place that they need to be to begin to get that foundation and to get that godly influence, not only from the men in the church, but from other godly women as well. And so, I thank God for my mom, that when my dad wasn't saved and when he wasn't going to church and he was more interested in hunting and all the things that and working and all those things, my mom saw the importance of having me and my brother in church, and she started taking us to church. And I think she did that because she cared about us and the influence that we could get from that and the things that we needed. And the result of that was that eventually my dad got saved and got called into the ministry, and our family changed altogether. But had my mom not taken the initial step, I don't know where I'd be today. I don't know where my kids would be today, or if I'd even have kids. I don't know whether I would have recognized the godly character even of my wife as we met, and those things that were important as I saw her family and the way that they functioned. All that was important. But I give the credit to God and to my mom, who, in spite of the fact that my father would not go, She made the effort to get us there, and I applaud all of those mothers who do that. And I'm thankful for the ones who faithfully come and try to get their children in church. It's not easy. My kids grew up in church, in a small church, where many times they were the only two young ones that were there. They didn't have a broad, big Sunday school class, or they didn't have youth groups and all of those things, and that was a disadvantage for them. But that was the nature of my ministry and the work that we went to. But I know that they grew up around some godly people from the influence of that church that they've met over the years. I'm sure that were it not for that, Nicole would have never met Robert, because we would have never brought Nicole down here for gospel music school. And so the importance of the church just cannot be overemphasized as to having your children in church. I'm almost done. The boundary of morality. The boundary of morality. A stand-up mom is going to teach her children about what's morally right and what's morally wrong, because I guarantee you they are not going to hear it in the world. They are not going to hear it at school anymore. We did when I went to school, because my teachers were people we went to school with that lived in our neighborhood. That's not the case anymore. And in many cases, they're not allowed to teach those things. The public schools tolerate all kinds of immorality, even among their teaching staffs. A few years ago, the school would not have tolerated, because those teachers were examples to the children. And so moms are going to try to lay down a right foundation morally for their children, because those foundational principles are what will help guide them through their life. And so stand-up moms are going to try to do that. And believe me, our children and our grandchildren, they're cast into just like a sea of immorality, and it comes to them from every side, from the television shows that we have to the radio programs to politics to everything. It seems that they're exposed to is pulling and twisting them. I just heard a commercial this week where Dove soap was showing various mothers and families around the world, and they were showing the mothers and their love for their children. They showed a couple which were transgender. They as an advertisement for the soap. So they moved into that realm of it's more important to make money by appealing to the transgender than to establish the moral principle of one man and one woman that God laid out. What happened to just our soap will get you clean? No, they've got to play into the political side of it and try to show that, oh, Dove soap, we promote transgender families. We promote those things, two men in a marriage union. We promote those things. Either one of them can claim to be mothers, or they both claim to be mothers. And so that undermines the natural foundations that God has laid down for us. So the boundaries of morality is one of the things that stand-up moms teach. I guess my conclusion to this message, and someone will get a song, and I'll leave it to you guys to figure out who's going to do that. Someone will get a song. My conclusion is that real moms want for their children what God wants for them. Real moms, stand-up moms, want for their children what God wants for them. What does God want for our children? God wants our children to be brought up to learn about Him, to be morally upright, to be productive in society, to do that which is right, to shun that which is wrong, and to be a part of the society, to improve the society. And sometimes tough decisions had to be made. Jochebed wanted what God wanted for her child, and she had to make a tough decision. I can see all the faces. Who was Jochebed? Jochebed was the mother of Moses. They lived in a difficult time. A time in which the Pharaoh had commanded that all children, all male children, were to be killed. She lived in a society in which that to have a male child was to endanger her and to endanger the child. And what did she do? She wanted what was best for her child. And in order to do that, she gave him up. Now, I'm not suggesting that you have to do that, but I'm suggesting that sometimes moms have to make tough decisions. And so what did she do? We know the story of how she took him out and she put him in a little ark and floated him down in the bulrushes and she gave him up. Well, God gave him back to her that she could bring him up in the foundation of teaching him. And you can go read that story if you don't know all the details of it. But she had to make a tough decision. And when she looked at Moses, she knew he was special. Somehow in her heart, she knew he was special. And God had something special for him to do. And she was willing to make the sacrifice in order that God might have and use him for what that he had intended for. We had, as a background reading this morning, we had the story in our Sunday school of Hannah as she prayed to God. She had no children. And she said, God, if you'll give me a child, I'll give him back to you. I promise you, if you'll give him to me, that I will dedicate him back to you. And she made that tough choice. God gave her Samuel, and she gave him right back to God to be brought up in the temple. And Samuel became a great judge and a priest for God. Moms want what God wants for their children. Do you think that Mary found it easy? That she found it easy to stand there at the cross and watch her son die on that cross? And the dagger and the sword that pierced her own heart as she saw him dying on that cross? But I truly believe that in her heart by then, she understood. Well, she probably understood a lot of it at the beginning because the angel had appeared to her and said that she was going to be with child. And that was a special child. And she knew it. She knew it from the beginning. Now, Mary made a couple of mistakes along the way. Remember the time that she went off and she left him in Jerusalem and forgot about him? And there was a day's journey away before she remembered him. Most of us think, boy, I'd find it hard to lose my child. So Mary didn't always do everything right. Mary was selfish on one occasion. They'd gone to a wedding, and she wanted, I don't know what promoted her, why she wanted to do it, but they ran out of wine, and she asked Jesus to turn the water into wine. She instructed them, well, if you go to him, he can fix this problem. So there's somewhat selfishness in that, I'm sure, is the reason that Mary did that. But I know that as she was at that cross and saw him suffering on that cross, if she could have done it, she would have traded places with him because she loved him. But she could not. She could not be on that cross because he alone could do what God had for him to do. And she was willing to suffer what she had to in order for him to fulfill God's purpose. I think that that's what moms, stand-up moms want. They want for their children what God wants for them. And they have responsibilities in order to prepare them for that. Have you got a song? I'm gonna close. I've been way longer than I intended to be. This was to be a message this morning to honor our mothers, but also as a reminder of the great responsibility upon you as new mothers. Some of you young ladies that are yet to be mothers, I hope that you'll take this message to heart and realize that a child is a great gift from God, but coming with that gift comes great responsibility. As the old saying goes, the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. That's how much influence that mothers have on children. Go ahead, Robert.
Do number 7.